Back together again, midweek Wednesday edition, October 11th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We open the show talking about a startling new report that outlines problems affecting about one-fifth of Connecticut young folks between the ages of 14 and 26. We updated the current hostilities between Israel and Hamas with comments from National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, and Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Haar dropped by for his weekly chat. You know, I pore over a lot of stuff during the day before I do this show. In fact, I start poring over the stuff when the previous day's show is done, and I kind of make little notes to myself, little sticky notes here around the station and also at home where my computer is, and I'm like, talk about this, talk about that, whatever. And of course, we'll be following the breaking news today, anything else that changes in this escalating conflict between Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah. And obviously, we'll get to that. But there's a story today that I noticed in the Connecticut Mirror, and it was posted bright and early this morning at 5 a.m. by Jessica Harkey. Now, we get into numbers a lot on this program, right? And mainly it's dollars and cents stuff and political polling and stuff that I say that, you know, illustrates maybe where we are as a society and where we're heading and where we're going. So I saw this story and I glanced at the headline. I started to read it and I said, you know what? I don't know if we have any answers to this, but man, oh man, this is one of those stories that you look at, and as rich of a state as we are, as well set up as a lot of us are in this state, it's really sad. New report out there says about 19% of connected youth are disconnected or at risk from 2021 to 2022. So that was the last reporting year, last year. And we've all heard the term at risk. We generally know what that is. There's a set of circumstances there, and we've seen it and heard it all the time about, you know, low income, dysfunction, maybe lack of a family unit. And again, it's not to, at least in my mind, in any way, shape, or form, discount these young people, because to me, unless it starts to go asunder and deviates into bad stuff, you know, everybody's life is precious just by definition. But listen to these numbers. And how do we fix this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, and we'll get to all of our other news later on today. I will effort some live coverage from the White House, if we can do that, regarding any news briefing today on the Israel and Hamas war. But think about this. A new report released this morning by the Dalio Education Report, right? Get this. More than, now we're not a big state. We're what, 3 point something million? I don't know how many Utes there are in this state. More than 119,000, or about 19%. But let's, for the sake of argument here, say it's 1 in 5. And I don't mean to be flip about this, but let's round it up slightly. Right? Let's round it up slightly. And say it's 1 in 5. 1 in 5 would be a hard 20% here. More than 119,000, or about 1 in 5 young people in Connecticut. And we're not just talking about teens here. Between the ages of 14 and 26. 26 is an adult. Our parents, a lot of our grandparents were married, had nuclear families, and by 26, I think my late ex-mother-in-law had all 3 of her kids, my son's mom and her brother and sister, by the time she was 25. But get this, New report says more than 119,000, or about 1 in 5 young people in the state between 14 and 26, 12-year gap there, were at risk or disconnected in 2022. The report puts together numbers from the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness, the State Department of Children and Families, the Labor Department, the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and the State Department of Education. Says more than 63,000 young adults were disconnected and 56,000 students were at risk in the survey year of 2021 and 2022. Now, what is at risk? The report defines at risk as high schoolers. Okay, so we're talking high school age here, 15, 16, 17, and 18, who had a low number of credits and were not on track to graduate on time, and students struggling with other factors, including chronic absenteeism or behavioral issues. So what does disconnected mean in this story? Disconnected was defined as high school graduates, so 18 and above, up to 26, who were neither employed nor enrolled in higher education. High school non-graduates who were employed, young adults who had neither a high school diploma nor employment, and incarcerated individuals as an age group. So think about it. 19%, again, let's round that up to make it 20. That's 1 in 5. That's 1 in 5 between high school and young graduates. And that's quite a sweeping thought here, isn't it? You go from 14, where you've gotten out of elementary school, and many of us entered high school at 14, and we turned 15 during our freshman year or first year in high school. You can't say freshman anymore. That's considered sexist. And then up to 26. So 1 in 5 in the state are at risk or disconnected. And if you do the math, that's 119,000 out of about 600,000 individuals from 14 to 26 in Connecticut. 1 out of 5 is not good. The report ties the outcomes for these young people to the state's finances and job market. It estimates that by getting all of these youths back on track, listen to this. In a state of 3 million and change, if we got these 119,000 youths back on track, get a diploma, stay out of prison, a focus as to what your job wants to be, what do you want to do with your job? Connecticut would save, you ready for this? You know how much we would save in social services? $650 million. This is staggering stuff. 1 out of 5 youths between 14 and 26 just entering high school to having graduated college, and by 26, you may be married, you may be steadily employed in that first job. 1 out of 5 of those people in Connecticut are wayward in some way. Their lives have taken them in some direction which is not good. So if we could just straighten that out, $650 million would be saved. And you know how much that would add? It says here, $5.5 billion to the state's gross domestic product. Now, you look at the cities where this is the worst. This is according to data. Is anyone surprised? New Haven, Bridgeport, Waterbury, Hartford, New Britain, New London. In 26 Connecticut towns, more than one-third of high school students are at risk of not graduating. And all those cities I just mentioned to you, Bridgeport, Hartford, Waterbury, New Britain, New Haven, Windham, also Somers, and New London, all those, Somers, Windham, New London, Hartford, New Britain, Waterbury, New Haven, and Bridgeport. According to this report, those are the metro areas, the cities, that more than 40% of high school students are at risk of not graduating. Between 33 and 40%. Of high school students are at risk of not graduating in Danbury, in Washington, Connecticut, in Torrington, in Naugatuck, in Ansonia and Derby, in Stamford, in Hamden, in West Haven, in Westbrook, in Middletown, in East Hartford, in Manchester, in Thompson, in Killingly, in Plainfield, in Preston. So it's big town and small town, big city and small city. And in all the other cities and towns that I didn't mention here, you still have up to one-third of high school students at risk of not graduating. How do we fix this? And let me now go to the elephant in the room here. Is it the family unit? Because, again, there are people who would say that, and you can point to numbers, that prior to the expansion of LBJ's so-called Great Society programs, late 60s and early 70s, mid to late 60s, and then early 70s, a lot of people said this would be the downfall, or if not the downfall, a contributing factor. Is this because, and I'll just put it out there, is it because of the family unit not being there for enough young people, not just for teens, but for young adults as well? And here's the thing. Where's the light at the end of the tunnel on this? Haven't we been talking about this since the late 60s and early 70s? So through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s. When's it going to end? When is it going to end? This story is absolutely frightening. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How do we fix this? Explain to me how we fix this, because we've been dealing with this for decades and decades and decades.
We may, in fact, find out that more Americans are part of the hostage pool. So, as Corrine said, our message to all these families affected is that, you know, we're with you, we're grieving with you. We're sorrowful with you. We're worrying with you. And we're going to do everything we can, particularly for those who don't know where a loved one is, to find out where they are and to get them home with you where they belong. And that includes, of course, being willing to assist in advice or counsel when it comes to hostage recovery efforts. Now, of course, the Israelis have a very robust hostage recovery capability of their own. Sadly, they have had been forced to perfect that particular kind of capability, but we also have a lot of know-how, too, and we're offering to share that with the Israeli Defense Forces. At the same time, we're sharing additional defense-related support. I think you saw that the Israeli military announced today, with some imagery, the first tranche of U.S. military assistance arriving in Israel. That will continue. We also... as I think the president alluded to yesterday, we're able to replenish some of their Iron Dome interceptor missiles. These were missiles that we already had in stock in Israel. We simply just transferred ownership over to the Israeli Defense Forces. So, again, more aid, more assistance will be coming in in coming days. As you also know, the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford and her strike group are now in the eastern Mediterranean. They arrived yesterday. They are there for deterrence purposes, to make it clear to any would-be actor, organization, group, terrorist network, nation state, anybody who thinks that with hostile intent towards Israel, that this is the time to widen and expand the conflict, that that we will take our national security interests seriously. I would also note that the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower aircraft carrier and her strike group will be departing on a pre-scheduled, long-scheduled deployment to the European Command Area of Responsibility. They'll start that deployment in the coming week or so. They will be going initially across the Atlantic and into the Mediterranean, where they will be available if needed. Now, no decisions have been made. I've seen some press reporting out there that that we've already made some kind of final decision that a second carrier is going to be placed in the Eastern Med. No operational decisions like that have been made, but she will be heading in that direction. Her ships will be with her, and she certainly will be an available asset if needed. Bottom line is, as I said, we're sending a loud and clear message. The United States is ready to take action should any actor hostile to Israel consider trying to escalate or widen this war. I think Jake said that pretty well yesterday. We're also going to continue to talk to our Israeli partners about their needs to ensure, again, that they have what they require to defend their country and their people. And that's just not going to stop. In fact, it's almost an hourly conversation that we're having with our counterparts. Now, I know many of you have been asking about or expressing some interest in the idea of safe passage in Gaza for civilians. Let me just say right up front, we're actively discussing this with our Israeli and our Egyptian counterparts. We support safe passage for civilians. Civilians are not to blame for what Hamas has done. They didn't do anything wrong, and we continue to support safe passage. I don't have an announcement to make today. I can't tell you a specific route or a corridor. I just want to make it clear that we are actively working on this with our Egyptian and our Israeli counterparts. Civilians are protected under the laws of armed conflict, and they should be given every opportunity to avoid the fighting. Now, if I could switch to Ukraine just quickly. Today, the Secretary of Defense announced at the...
All right, so there you go. We'll tag it there as he segued to Ukraine. No major changes there, but there you have it. So nothing earth-shattering is... And I'm not trying to belittle what's going on. Please don't assume that. But again, warnings from the White House on a number of fronts. And listen, they know Iran is behind this, whether there's direct money or funding or whatever. Don't take your eye off the real perpetrators here. Yes, Hamas did this. Yes, Hezbollah did this. But the Iranians are fueling the fire of the anger of Hamas because Israel is about to normalize business and political and diplomatic relationships with Saudi Arabia. And as John Kirby pointed out there, and it was good that he did, this is not against this is not against the Palestinian people or who live as Palestinian peoples there. It's not. It is against Hamas and Hezbollah. And again, I'm getting a little tired of people who keep saying, well, the oppression of Gaza. Well, again, let me liken the situation as somebody explained it to me years ago. Supposing you were living in the state of Rhode Island, which I think at one time was maybe the size of Israel, depending upon the amount of land that Israel has given back over the years, and people in the eastern part of Connecticut were saying, well, no, we want to drive you into the sea, and we're going to keep lobbing missiles and attacking you, and that's the way it is. So, again, if the people of Rhode Island could then say, well, the way we're going to stop this is to keep a tight control on the part of eastern Connecticut that's doing this, don't you think they would do that? Don't you think they would do that? And imagine if you had part of eastern Connecticut attacking Rhode Island and the money to let eastern Connecticut attack Rhode Island was coming from New York or coming from Massachusetts. And they would sit there and say, well, it's not us. We would never do such a thing. Folks, you have to understand that Iran is the root of 95% of the evil in this world. They are, and they don't hide it. And look, honestly, if you read the accounts here, this $6 billion that we just gave back to Iran to get our hostages back. Now, is it possible that this money was not used for the attack? Yeah, because they've been planning this apparently for a long time. But look at the timing. Timing is everything. It is. The Iranians got their deal, and they may be saying, well, what the heck? They're going to watch how we spend this $6 billion, but we can do a lot more, as our buddy Eric Erickson pointed out earlier today from selling the oil. Folks, I got to tell you, this conflict is going to go on for a while, but shame on Joe Biden, and shame on Jake Sullivan, and shame on Kamala Harris, and shame on every leftist apologist in Congress, and I'm done with Omar. I'm done with the squad about the oppression. If we don't turn the screws on Iran as tight as we can, economically, oil-wise, and militarily, then we've got no balls. We are now geldings here in this country. I mean, that's the way. And remember, we have had, what did John Kirby just say? Americans killed, and you don't think Hamas knew that? You don't think Iran knew that? You don't think the mullahs in Iran knew exactly what they were doing? Come on. I mean, yes, I know it's Hezbollah, and I know it's Hamas. But Hamas is a terrorist organization. I don't want to hear any prevaricating, oh, my God. Oh, and by the way, you might be well served if you have a college age kid who is looking at Harvard. Don't send him there. Have you seen what's going on with Harvard? Basically, the student groups at Harvard are blaming Israel. If you don't believe me, look it up. And I think the president or the head or one of the heads of the student body at NYU's law school is also blaming Israel. You don't believe me? Look it up. So if you're recruiting a lawyer, maybe you have a divorce coming up, or if you have a, you know, anything you need a lawyer for. I don't know, you're buying property, whatever. Ask them if they went to NYU. Dead serious. Oh, you did? Well, I won't be using you because your alma mater is okay with terrorists. Oh, that's a little harsh. Well, too bad. Folks, I'm not kidding you. I don't make any of this up. When you get a chance tonight, you're home luxuriating in front of your computer. There's no football till tomorrow night. Google what the student body at Harvard is saying. I don't know. What did Yale say? Has Yale said anything? Have the leftist loonies at Yale, the terrorist-loving loonies at Yale, have they come out of the woodwork yet? Out there on Elm Street as they stagger up and down to Bar and Sally's and Pepe's? Man, I got to tell you, the left, they, oh, my God, they, oh, and what's her name there in Congress, the, you know, the squad members there, Jayapal and Rashida Tlaib and Omar toting around the Palestinian flag. That looks great in Congress, doesn't it? But again, hey, they get elected. People get the government they deserve. Look, I am not for snuffing out anybody's freedom of speech. I'm not. But I have an interesting audio clip that I'm going to play for you coming back where Rashida Tlaib was asked by a Fox News reporter, hey, you okay with these babies getting beheaded? It's interesting what she said or she didn't say. Imagine if that was a Republican. The collective aneurysm, the collective angst that you'd hear from corners far and wide, as well you should. But it's the squad. Shh, don't say anything. All right, fourth and final. We'll get back to open phones here in just a bit at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Every midweek Wednesday at this time, 5 o'clock hour, we tap into the mind and the musings of Dan Harr, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. Dan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. How's everything?
I'm doing well, Dan, and it's fortuitous you wanted to talk about something that I opened the show with. This Dalio report here, Dan, roughly one out of five young people from a pretty wide age group here in the state, Dan, are apparently not doing too well.
Yeah, I mean, this is, in one way, it's not a surprise because we know the number of people who are, for example, high school dropouts. We know the number of people who are on some sort of social service program. We know the number of people who are incarcerated, but it's never really been looked at as a whole. And so this takes data from all sorts of state departments, labor department, and also the number of adults, young adults, who are not working. And it combines all that, and it says one in five, as you said, it's really 19%, so it's almost one in five, people in the age group from age 14 to 26.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's a big crisis, and what do you do about it? The first thing they want to do about it is let's look at the problem, and then let's figure out what to do from there.
And yet, Dan, the economic cost, and I was relating some of those costs to my listeners here about, you know, what this... Now, look, you and I both know everybody's not going to be fully employed at any time out of this group, but the fact that it was broken down into what it costs for social services, $600-plus million, and the potential loss of increased GDP for the state brings this to a whole nother level.
Yeah, the total... The estimated cost of social services, including incarceration and medical services that are paid for by Medicaid and all that, is about $400 million. And there's another about $350 million in lost tax revenues if people that are not working were working. Now, of course, when we talk about that $750 million or $800 or $650, obviously these are blunt numbers. We don't know exactly what it is. We're talking about an ideal universe, right? If the country and the state were working perfectly, this is what would be. So to me, the bigger issue is the tragedy of lost and squandered lives that don't need to be that way. As I put it in a column that's going to appear soon when I finish, it's really about the lives. It's not so much about the money. We as a state can pay the $700 million a year. You'd rather not. But the real issue is what makes society function better, and that is if a minimum number of people are disconnected, and that's really what this is about.
Yeah, and it's tough, Dan, as I said earlier in my show, to draw these blanket conclusions. People, even though the numbers are not good in the cities, I always caution people as saying, well, be careful of painting this with a broad brush, because you and I both know we grew up with friends and relatives, a lot of us, who some of whom had ideal upbringings in the suburbs, two cars, a wonderful house, and they turned out to be rotten, miserable people, and we've all known people that have escaped abject poverty, single-parent households, who've done very well in life. So as you say, it's a frustrating problem. And I asked the question you did. Well, what do we do about it? We've been trying this for decades now.
Well, number one, you raise awareness. And so there's a sense, the idea of this Dalio report, and I spoke with Barbara Dalio at the press conference about it, and it's a very humanist approach. It's not an approach that says, here's a problem, let's take a baseball bat and beat it back. It's a very humanist approach. It's very hands-on, one person at a time. You do more spending on programs that are working. And the Dalio's already fund seven programs. The Dalio Education Foundation already funds seven different programs, including different urban poverty-fighting programs. I went to one in Hartford today called Compass, and I spoke to a young man who's there. That takes people who have been incarcerated or who have been in the criminal justice system and helps them get jobs, helps them get training to get jobs. So there are programs like this that we know do work. And so one recommendation is you got to do more of that, right? So it's just lots of different things. And, of course, it puts more pressure on the schools, and the schools are already under enormous pressure. So there's no simple answer when we look at the problem of dropping out. And by the way, it is more in cities, but it's in every city.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly as you said, exactly exactly as you said.
And again, Dan, just to wrap up on this topic, you know, I looked at that graphic that the Connecticut Mirror put up, and when you look at the number of students, Dan Hart, that are in danger of not graduating on time, I mean, that kind of, from high school, that is, that kind of reverberates, because there are going to be, no matter how many job openings we have, Dan, of the state now, 90,000 or 100,000, whatever it is, there are still some jobs and some employers that do require at least a minimum high school education.
Well, that's right. And more, and even more poignantly, it's not whether they require that diploma, but they require a person who has the sorts of life skills that come from that, which are showing up and, you know, you take for granted, you know, you come to the station every day, you know what you have to do to do, you know, 40 or 50 years of work in a job. But just that life skill is something that's not necessarily inherent in everybody. And that's the kind of thing that people need to learn, and that you may or may not learn it in high school. I should say this quickly, there's good news and bad news. The good news is that it doesn't appear that the numbers are going up over the last 6, 7, 8 years.
Okay.
And the bad news is that with COVID, we do not have the numbers yet past 2021, and there's fear that 23 and 24 are going to be worse because of the effects of the pandemic delayed.
Wow. So we'll look to see those numbers. Dan, finally, you wrote a piece a few days ago that I found intriguing. Now, it does look like we may spin the wheel by a vowel. We may have a Speaker of the House again. But you had mused something that maybe could have fallen on the shoulders of some of our Connecticut Democrats in Congress to try and, you know, take part in a plan here to avoid some of this lunacy that we see in the House.
Yeah, that's right. My idea was, and it's still my idea. It's still a potentially valid idea if Steve Scalise doesn't pull out a floor vote. It's one thing to win the Republican caucus. Another thing, he's got to win on the floor, and he got 113 votes. He needs 200 votes, 217 votes. So everyone who voted for the other guy, Jim, what's his name? I don't even want to say his name.
Yeah.
Jim Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who voted for Jim Jordan has to vote for Steve Scalise. So my idea was for the Democrats to band together with the moderate Republicans and pick a more moderate speaker. And people like Rosa DeLauro thought I was absolutely bonkers for suggesting that the Democrats...
Really? She wasn't happy with you, Dan? Did she say that to you?
Oh, yeah. She said, she says, look, you've been doing this for a long time, and you know how the system works, and you know the system doesn't work like that. And I had said, well, my friend who covers Congress said I'm very naive. And she said, oh, yes, you are very naive to think that. But I maintain that these are extraordinary times, and it may still happen that Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan deadlock, or that Steve Scalise can't get all those votes, and there is no speaker. And that's the time, if this goes on a week or so, and that's what Representative Jim Himes said, if this starts to go on for days and days, then you step in and the Republicans. But the Republicans have to go to the Democrats and say, we need help. And that's not happening right now. So we're still stuck. I wouldn't be totally optimistic yet, that's for sure.
And then, of course, Dan, finally, if they go for help, they're going to say, you know, the Democrats are going to say, okay, you want us to pull your bacon out of the frying pan. What's in it for us? We all know how this works, right?
Yeah, well, numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are you drop the impeachment investigation. That's for sure. And then you go from there. And let's start by not holding up the nation every 6 weeks for what's called a continuing resolution, which is paying your bills. And I get that the Republicans have a point. We are spending too much money. They're absolutely right. But let's settle that through the budget process rather than when the bills come due. There's two different things.
Absolutely. Dan, thank you as always. Read them. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut media columnist and editor. And Dan, we'll look forward to your next piece. Thanks, my friend. Be good.
Great to be here. Happy Wednesday.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Yeah, that. Dan got a little blowback from Rosa on that, huh? Don't expect us to help out the Republicans. Listen, I suspect, and I've said this on and on and on, what do I say all the time about this? If you got all these people into a room, away from the microphones, away from the cameras, away from the bloggers, away from the social media, turn your phones off, put them on airplane mode, whatever, put it in a way, of the 435 members of the House, I will bet you that, nah, there's hardliners on both sides, probably about 30, 60. So out of the 435 members of the House, I'll bet you about 350 of them, if they could do it secretly, which they can't because all these votes are recorded, and that's fine. I don't think we should go with secret ballots, dear, no. But I would tend to think that people, you know, maybe not Rosa DeLauro, she might be a holdout. She, for example, is a bit more progressive, you could say. Is she the most progressive member of the Connecticut caucus? Probably. Probably followed by John Larson and probably followed by Johanna Hayes. So I could see those three members of Congress, just my gut feeling, saying, hey, no, we ain't going to help out the Republicans. And maybe Mr. Himes, Jim Himes from the 4th. A little bit younger with his financial background, and maybe old Joe Courtney out there in the 2nd, who just, he runs and he wins, and it's another submarine or two every year for the folks at EB and Groton. I could see them saying, well, okay, we'll help you, but like, you know, like Dan said. And I agree with Dan, and I know a lot of people are going to jump up my backside for this. Enjoy that, by the way, if you want to. The whole impeachment thing against Biden, it's going nowhere. It really is. He's not going to be the nominee, I think. But again, everybody is saying, well, the money in coming into Hunter. Well, again, unless you have a smoking gun, unless you have fire, never mind a smoking gun, which there's debate as to what you do, then it is kind of useless. And let's say, for a lot of people who are on the right who don't like Joe Biden, they want to bounce him. Okay, you bounce Joe Biden, and then what? Kamala Harris becomes president. Do you want that? I'm not saying you have to want it or not want it. You may like her, you may not, but she is the insurance policy right now. She is. It's just the way when Joe Biden was selected to be the VP, the vice president for Barack Obama. That's what people said. Well, Joe Biden is Barack Obama's insurance policy. And Mr. Obama, he pretty much admitted it later on. He didn't know anything about foreign policy. Joe Biden did. Now, a lot of people say Joe Biden's been wrong in any foreign policy, every foreign policy issue. But, you know, just the way last night I'm listening to some coverage, I know I'm a nerd, the 1960 campaign. Why do you think LBJ was chosen to be Kennedy's running mate? You think a bunch of Southern Baptists are going to vote for a New England Catholic? Come on.